I'm ready. Hit it.
There it is.
Senator, are you going to say anything about warning Air Force Base when you go to Arista County tomorrow?
Not necessarily. You know, we had a meeting with the committee with Dave Emery and Bill and I think Mr. Haynes, as I remember. And we've had our staff get in touch with about four different people.
Senator,
if somebody asks a question about it, we'd be happy to.
Senator, how can you justify the expense of flying 20 aides thousands of miles across the country in a jet airplane for a church service?
Do you think it was worth it?
I'm asking you.
That's my answer. It was worth it.
Is that a campaign star?
Oh, you can look at it either way. I didn't look at it that way, but you can look at it that way.
What's the political stuff, or who's paying for this?
No, we were invited to go as...
Are you paying for this personally?
No. We were invited to go as with Senator Mondale and both Carter and Ford. They declined, and I accepted.
But I think what we're asking, Senator, though, is that you fly on a plane paid for by the President Ford Committee, and
right,
you take all these aides along and everything, and what is the political justification for this 10 days before?
Oh, I don't imagine it would it hurt anything to be there, you know.
Then it wasn't political stuff.
No, I don't know. I mean, you put any interpretation you want.
I mean, it does cost a lot of money.
Let's take some local questions.
Yeah. Well, is this an open news conference or isn't it? I mean,
well, go ahead. I've already answered that question, so.
No, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's going to be a dirty campaign. They're going to take shots at me. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And they go out and proceed to do it. And Well, I think we just look at Carter's record. He's had to apologize to Mrs. Johnson. He's had to apologize to the Graham family, to George Wallace. And I think we understand he's been on the wrong road. Well, I don't know. I've worked hard, and I've been all over this country talking about President Ford, what a good man he is, and the fact that we're at peace, and the economy's on the upswing. What I've had anything or not, I guess, will be determined later, but it just seems to me that we've been out there, and that's what the vice presidential candidate should do.
You think you're going out to strengthen the Midwestern states, the Farm Belt?
We've been encouraged. I think the Midwest now looks very good for President Ford, and whether I've done that or not, really doesn't matter. The important thing is that the American farmer understands that his best hope lies with the Republican president, namely President Ford.
What are you doing in Bangor, Maine, with only 8 days left before the election?
We're looking for votes in Bangor, Maine, and we hope to pick up 4 electoral votes in the great state of Maine. I'd like to ride on Bill Cohen's coattail. That may not be possible, but we're here working, and we're going to be working the rest of this week all over this country.
You consider Maine a toss-up right now?
Yes, I think so. There are some polls indicate we're slightly ahead, but we're in the 1, 2, or 3% range. The error can wipe it out, but we would like to carry the state of Maine, of course, and hopefully my visit can just keep Republicans and Independents and Democrats who are leaning toward Ford, keep them in the right frame of mind, let them understand that we're serious about it. We want their help. We need their help.
Thank you.
Why are you with me, and why is it so important to you?
Well, we're in the last 8 days of the campaign. We're going to be in many states where it's very close. It's very close in the state of Maine. So we believe we can carry Maine for President Ford with all the help we've had here. Good Republicans, Independents, and Democrats are concerned about the future of America.
It obviously costs quite a bit to make a campaign swing of this type. Is it worth it for only 4 electoral votes?
Well, I never figure up the cost. It's my duty to go out and look for electoral votes, and I haven't tried to pit one state against another. We think, we believe strongly that there's a good possibility in the state of Maine. We're here for that purpose, and we believe our supporters appreciate that. We hope they do.
There's been some talk, primarily by members of the Republican Party over the last few weeks, people saying that Jimmy Carter has peaked, and Walter Mondale has peaked, and that their popularity is on the decline, and yours is on the upswing. How do you feel?
Well, we hope that's the case. We think it is. There's evidence of that around the country. You look back just a few short weeks ago, and you found Carter 30-some points ahead in all the polls. Arbitrarily high, of course, but very, very high. Now we're within 1, 2, 3 points. It's remarkable. It indicates not only a great concern about Governor Carter, but a resurgence of support for a man they know, President Ford, someone who's predictable and dependable, and someone they can count on in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. In the country, you're trying to lately about the, what's being called the low level of the campaign. The candidates are reacting to mistakes of the other party, personal attacks and aren't talking about the issue, and that the American people are not pleased with it. They want to hear about the issues. What are your views? Do you feel?
Well, I don't know. Almost at every stop, I'm just trying to think. Since the first question I had on that, we're talking about defense, and their very poor record in defense. That isn't personal. We're talking about the future of our country. We talk about taxes. President Ford's effort to reduce taxes for middle-income Americans, and apparently Carter's plan to raise taxes, at least that's what he said to the Associated Press. I can't think of any more important issues than our defense or the tax structure in America. I assume if you're suggesting that we get up and call, I don't say you're suggesting, but if the people out there suggesting that somehow both sides get up and call each other names, that doesn't happen. Maybe in the heat of some great oratory, which there hasn't been much of anyway, somebody might let go a little something. But I really haven't noticed any low-level campaign. There have been some heated statements made. Governor Carter has apologized 2 or 3 times for things he said, but no one else has.
The state of Maine is a small state, as we've heard several times this morning, only 4 electoral votes. It's getting close to the election. The Carter campaign got off early and fairly well in Maine. Do you feel the Republicans are overtaking it?
I think so. I read last evening Carter at one time had a lead of 20 points or something in that area. Maybe it was artificially high, but it was substantial. Now it appears that we may have a slight lead. Maybe it's even. Maybe he's a little ahead, but it's a great change. And that same change has taken place all across this country. Even in his own state of Georgia, it's tightened up. And it's a recognition of not only the contradictions in Carter himself, but also a recognition that, that Gerry Ford actually done a pretty good job. You know, why do you want to change? We're at peace. The economy, yes, we have unemployed. We're working on that, but there are 88 million people working in America. Really, what's so bad about America? What's so bad about our leadership? And I think when people focus on that, they're going to stay with President Ford, the incumbent.
Later in the morning, you'll be heading into Aroostook County, Maine's potato growing area, and be talking with the farmers. What's your message for them this morning?
Well, no special message. We're going to talk again about inflation and taxes and defense and our concern for American agriculture, my background in agriculture, 16 years in the Congress. We don't have any bombs to drop in that area. I'm just going to talk with the farmers, maybe pick up some information that would be helpful to us.
With the farmer heading the other ticket, how have the Republicans been doing?
I don't want to get into characterization, but I don't really believe he's a farmer. He's a warehouseman. He depends on farmers. And, of course, the peanut program is heavily subsidized. And he hasn't been subsidized heavily because he's not a farmer. And I think he plays that a little bit, but in my view, farmers understand they're looking for a philosophy. It's not whether you come from Maine or Georgia or Kansas or Michigan or wherever. It's how do you feel? Do you want to get government off the backs of farmers? That's the best phrase that I know. It's not whether I'm a farmer or even the fact that I've had 16 years in agriculture in the Congress probably doesn't turn that many people, but at least they focus on that information. Maybe they buy it, maybe they don't.
Is this TV or radio?
Radio? I finally got one. I held one up down somewhere.
Senator, this election is obviously going to be decided by the undecided voters. It's a very large block, 20, in our polls anyway, over 20-30%.
Right.
Who haven't made up their mind. Reston in the Times a couple of days ago offered the theory that the reason that the voters are holding back and haven't made up their mind yet is that, number one, they regard Ford as a person of not much vision, an acceptable risk, but they're not. The reason for the undecided block, according to Reston, is that the people have reservations about Carter, and they regard Ford as an unacceptable alternative. Do you buy that?
I think there's some element of truth there. You know, Ford is a known quantity, and if people can't quite come to that, they say, well, let me take another look at Carter. And they look at Carter, and you find an unknown quantity, and a lot of questions. I think, basically, there's still 20% undecided out there. I think in my state, in Kansas, we find farm unrest with Ford, but we find a lot of skepticism about Carter. The same is true in our larger areas in Wichita and Kansas City and Topeka, and very much the same across the country. I find probably less undecided in the southern part of this country, where Carter is sort of perceived as either a neighbor or somehow aligned with the South, and he's either very strongly supported or very strongly opposed. But there is a big undecided block.
Do you think that the election then is going to hinge on whether or not the next 8 days Carter can overcome these reservations about himself, and if he fails, then Ford might win the election by almost a default?
I think that's a fair assumption. I think, the other hand, though, I think Ford has to be out there proving something, too, that he does have that leadership, which he has, and that he has that staying power, and that he is concerned about taxes and employment and many of these issues at Carter's rate. It's really been a strange campaign, in a way, when you have only 50% of the people predicted will vote in the campaign. That says something about the candidates, something about our parties that we need to work on.
but it's probably a fair assessment that right now Carter's ahead. But there's this big block of undecided, and if they decide in the next 8 days that Carter, there's some question about him I can't buy, I think they're going to stay with the incumbent.
Or
stay home.
Stay home.
But does they... We catch up as they catch on. That's our theory.
Can I get you to, I guess, make a specific statement about Loring Air Force Base? Is there going to be any change before the election?
Well, the hearings start in mid-November. We met with the committee last time I visited Maine, Mr. Haynes and Mr. Collins and Mr. Emery, of course, and Bill Cohen. We just didn't meet. We communicated with four different people after that meeting to express the concern in Maine and ask that everything be considered and reviewed, and they're going to get into the public hearings. But I can't say what's going to happen at Loring. I've expressed the concern of the two congressmen and the two members of the committee when I was here, and I'm going to probably learn a great deal more today, either now or later on this morning.
But you haven't got any feedback from the administration whether or not might be a reconsideration?
No, I don't have any. Bill may have some. I don't have any, except there will be public hearings. As I said when I was here before, if you recall, we're going through somewhat the same process out in Richards Gebauer, which is barely in the Missouri, but has a lot of Kansans in it. That's been in court, and we just think it's the wrong thing to do, just as I'm certain the people of Maine do. Ours is a relocation. This would in effect be a modification, but if you take out 83% of the people, that's major surgery. That's not minor.
Can I ask you just one more question? I was out in Kansas City when you got the nomination. You were quite emotional when you were picked to be the vice presidential nominee. How does it wear with you, I guess, personally, to sit down in interviews and, in effect, be characterized as a hatchet man, to have the Democratic nominee indicate he will not respond to any statement made?
That indicates that we're getting the message across. And really, the hatchet man is I think, an unwarranted characterization, because it was given to me before I ever stepped off the platform. I never uttered a word, and some in the press who probably favor Carter in any event were saying I was a hatchet man, but no one has said it since. In fact, I was called a tabby cat in Time magazine and a gunslinger without a gun, I think, in another magazine. But Mondale brought it up again in our debate, whatever it was. Maybe it wasn't a debate, but it doesn't bother me because I think the transcripts are there. I've never alluded to Carter in a personal way. I've questioned his judgment on the Playboy interview. I've never alluded to Mondale. In fact, I have mentioned several times what great friends we were in the debate. He never said a good thing about me at all, which is probably typical. But it doesn't concern me a great deal. As long as I do my job and as long as I can sleep at night.
Do you think that the characterization has anything to do with, I guess, the Roper poll and some of the other polls, which indicate that Mondale has a more positive impact on the ticket than you do?
No, I think he has an impact among the ultra-liberals, and I think Ford and I have pretty much the same philosophy. Though I think we clearly won whatever it was, a debate or whatever. I think most people, not four debate coaches, that's all they could come up with in that one. But the people we've talked with, including some of the press who tend to be on the other side, I think we walked off of that. But who knows what we add to the ticket. Mondale is a demonstrated ultra-liberal, and I think he does keep some of those people in the fold for Carter who might otherwise slip away.
Thank you, John.
Attending a Playboy International meeting or something, I heard all these stories coming out of the room, but I am very pleased to be here, and I think Bill is right. It's his wife who called, Senator Percy, who called me and said, why aren't you going to Bangor? And I said, I didn't know I was supposed to. So I'm here, and I appreciate it very much. But I've been asked ever since getting off the plane, why are you in Maine? There are only four electoral votes here, and maybe it's my long association with Alf Landon that brings me here. One of his great victories when he ran for president was the great state of Maine. But I say very seriously that four electoral votes are very important. This is a very close election. And we're very happy to be in Maine, and I don't think our supporters are unhappy that we're here, but some seem to question why would you come to Maine with all these great big states and all these very, very important areas? Well, as I read and as I look and as I watch the polls, We're going to win the state of Maine by a close margin. And I want to try to help that. And I just appreciate the great efforts that you've all made in driving long distance to be here. Not only that, in working after we've gone for the next 7 days to ensure victory for a great American, President Ford. I think it's worth every minute of it, worth every day of it. And if you'll work for President Ford for 7 more days, he'll work for you for 4 more years. And that isn't a bad exchange in any event. Now, one point that I have stressed throughout the campaign, and I'll continue to stress the next 7 days, and it deals primarily with young Americans and their mothers and grandmothers, and yes, fathers and grandfathers, too, for that matter. We've been to 10 or 11 college campuses, and I can tell you there's been a great change on the campus in the past 4 or 5 years. Young people are enthusiastic about President Ford. They're enthusiastic about participating with a Republican candidate. And I can recall a period during the end of the Vietnam War when anyone who supported that effort was not particularly welcome. But there's been a great change. And I think it's largely due to the fact that young men are not being drafted. Young men can plan their education. They can go without interruption. They're not concerned or not fearful they're going to be drafted and dragged off to some far-off country to fight some war that we know little about. And that's true because we have a strong America, morally strong and militarily strong for the sake of peace, not for the sake of spending anyone's money in the Pentagon or in some military weapon system, but because President Ford understands, he's had the leadership and he's had the experience. In fact, 14 years he was a ranking Republican on the Military Preparedness Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee in the House. So he understands defense. He understands the weapon system. He understands the need. And he also understands, as president, that the Russians aren't cutting back on their defense efforts. There's been no indication that People's Republic of China are cutting back on their defense efforts. And so as I tried to do in our little stand-up press conference down in Houston a week ago with my counterpart, to point out that we are a strong country, and that we have freedom, and that young men and everyone else who's concerned about freedom and concerned about no conflict, concerned about staying out of war, ought to take a look at President Ford's record and ought to recognize the fact that no shots are being fired in anger, and all the things I've just alluded to are factual. They can't be controverted, can't be contradicted by Governor Carter or Senator Mondale or anyone else. And on the other side of that coin, our statements by Governor Carter that he would cut defense $15 billion, that's what he said in 75. Now he's come down to $5 to $7 billion. There's a record of Senator Mondale in the Senate. It's not my record, it's his, where he's voted to cut defense and cut defense and cut defense and voted against almost every new weapon system. And that sounds fine. We don't want to spend money for weapons. We don't want to spend money for defense. If we had some assurance from the Russians and other superpowers, or had some agreement with Russia and the other superpowers whereby we could avoid that expenditure. And even here, President Ford is working on a SALT agreement. He's working on some agreement to limit the arms race. But I just say, in the meantime, we can't afford to slip to number two in this world if we're going to have peace. And you can't sit down with anyone and make a deal. You can't sit down and discuss something unless you're strong, unless you have the facts on your side, or unless you're willing to negotiate into some secondary position. So I would just suggest that whatever else may be said in this campaign the next 8 days, if someone is undecided, some of your friends or some of your neighbors or Democrats or independents, we're talking about all Americans, take a look at President Ford's record and take a look what will be the record in the future insofar as a strong America, respected by our friends, respected by our adversaries because of strong leadership in the White House. And you can cut everything else away and strip it down, but those are the facts. And I kind of wonder, as I look at it and try to be objective, I've already figured out if Ford makes it, I'll make it, so don't worry about me. Don't have to spend any time on my race. and apparently not very much on Bill, so you can just spend it all for President Ford. In fact, we're trying to hang on to Bill's coattails or his necktie or whatever he's got, because with 70 to 80% in the polls, we could use a little of that. So, if you'll just devote that time, and then we can move to taxes very briefly. And Governor Carter is quoted as saying, again, we didn't say this. Governor Carter gave an interview to Associated Press. And he said, and he hasn't denied it, he said that he didn't think Americans wanted their taxes lowered. There may be some in this room who don't want their taxes lowered. I don't see anybody. We have a doctor with us. If you hold up your hand, we'll get to you as quickly as we can. But that's what Governor Carter said. You know, no one wants their taxes lowered. He also said in that interview, which I think ought to be of interest to some farmers and businessmen and others, yes, and retired people who bought some stock and trying to hold on to it, maybe sell it when it goes up at a good price to sustain themselves for another year, another 2 or 3 years. He said, and again, this is his quote, and you ought to dig it up, that all income should be treated alike. Well, that's a very fair-sounding statement. Everybody ought to take heart that he's going to treat all income alike, unless you bought that stock and thinking about selling it, because you're going to be denied your capital gains tax treatment. Unless you own breeding stock, or a farmer and own breeding stock and want to sell some of your breeding stock, then you're going to be taxed right across the board. Or if you sell land, you're going to be taxed right across the board. That's what Governor Carter said, and he hasn't denied it. He's also made a statement about taxing church property, everything except the church itself. And we've wondered, as I said, I think the last time I was in Maine, about senior citizens' homes owned by the churches and orphanages and other property owned by churches. Are they going to be taxed? Just tell us, Governor Carter, but tell us in advance. And he also said that every family above the median income level would probably have their taxes increased. He later said he didn't understand that that was $14,000 per American family. He thought he was talking about the rich. Well, he should have known that. He'd been running for office for 2 to 3 years. But he's talking about families with income of $14,000 or more. And I haven't found many of those middle-income families who wanted a tax increase. In fact, President Ford says you ought to have a tax cut. And I introduced the president's amendment on the Senate floor this year to raise your exemption from $750 to $1,000 per dependent, and was defeated on a straight party-line vote. So who really is concerned about middle-income Americans? Who's really concerned about tax reform and tax reductions? And again, Governor Carter's statements are there, and President Ford's record is there. So I just suggest that we're in those final days. We're very optimistic. There's movement in this country, and it's moving in our direction. And I've been in the South and the Midwest, and as Bill said, I make the same statement in my state or the state of Texas as I do in the state of Maine. We don't have one position for New England, another position for Southwest, another position for the far West. We have the same position. And we don't suggest that everyone agrees with us 100% of the time. But I do suggest that there's really one clear choice on November 2nd. And that clear choice is President Ford. He's that same that same decent, honest American who came to the White House at a very difficult time. He's that same decent, honest, open, candid, accessible president now that he was 2 years ago. And as someone indicated, whether he wins or loses, he'll be the same Jerry Ford. He's not going to change. All this power hasn't changed Jerry Ford. He still laughs and talks and visits and smiles and is concerned about all Americans. And I know he's a little concerned when Carter says he's against the poor and he's not concerned. He lacks compassion. He lacks leadership. And Carter points to his great record in Georgia, except we can't find that great record in Georgia. He says he didn't raise taxes in Georgia. I was in Fort Myers, Florida. I guess it was Sarasota, Florida on Saturday. And there was some man there from Macon, Georgia, who had a great big headline on the Macon paper. Well, again, it wasn't my statement. And it said, Carter did raise taxes. and it talked about the tax increases in the state of Georgia. And just the night before, he said on national television in the third debate that he hadn't raised taxes. Now, I just say that somewhere along the line, you've got to bring these things together. He's got to level with the American people. And it just seems to me that there's a great bulk of undecided vote out there because they can't put a finger on Carter. They don't know where he stands. The American people are searching for answers. And so when that day comes on November 2nd, those answers are still wanting, and Governor Carter has not expressed his positions on taxes and defense and any other area with any specificity, the voter's going to vote for President Ford, a known quantity, predictable quantity, and a good American. So I conclude by suggesting that, yes, we're in Maine. We're very proud to be in Maine. I'm very proud to be running with President Ford. We're very optimistic about November 2nd. We do need help. We need to get our vote out. And we would hope that in the next 7 or 8 days, you'll be out there working for President Ford. Not just because we're Republicans and think it'd be great if we were elected. It would be. It would help our party, I guess from a selfish standpoint. But beyond that, it's beyond the partisan boundaries. We're talking about the future of America, the direction we're going to take in America, and that's what really counts. And again,